This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 24th of November 2017. Hello and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 24th of November, which this week have been edited by Sheila Shepherd, Jane Thomas, Helen Ricketts and Jean Gardner. And your readers today are Noel Thorpe Tracy.
Hello.
Heather Thorpe Tracy.
Hello.
And Jane Harding.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Roy Faithful. Now the main headlines this week are Cooling on Ice Rink, Local Legend Lights Up City on Switch On, Planners Back Scheme for the New Arts Building. May we have the story behind the first headline, please? Heather.
Cooling on Ice Rink. Civic chiefs have said that they welcome plans for projects such as a £20 million permanent ice rink in Winchester after initially casting doubt on the idea. The plans revealed in the Chronicle last week outlined the vision to bring the first Olympic-sized rink on the south coast to Winchester, as well as a 120-bed hotel, restaurant, coffee house and convenience store. There would also be 10-pin bowling and indoor caving featured within the arena development. Privately funded by company Athos Developments, the project, estimated to cost £20 million, would be located at the council-owned depot site on Bar End Road, near to the planned Winchester Sports and Leisure Centre. Following a statement issued by Winchester City Council last week, which stated that the land was not on the market, a spokeswoman told the Chronicle, "As part of the development of a brand new sport and leisure centre, organisations have been invited to make comment on the emerging urban design framework for the site at Bar End. We understand that Athos Developments are proposing a development on the depot site, which would be adjacent to the new sport and leisure centre. We welcome approaches such as these and are looking to the evolving urban design framework to scope the future of the whole area. Any future development would be subject to the land being marketed for sale or lease and the submission of a planning application." As previously reported, those behind the project say the site would be self-sufficient in power, but will also provide the new leisure centre with sufficient power to heat the swimming pools and buildings, which it is claimed will save the local authority £200,000 a year in running costs. Edna Bowden, representing the Winchester Ice Sports Association, said, "We strongly support the proposals. Winchester is a thriving, vibrant, expanding city with an exploding student population. All these people need somewhere to go and something to do. The Winchester Ice Rink will offer so much to the community. Not only is this £20 million project for the depot site being offered absolutely free to Winchester, it comes with the added bonus via heat exchange of approximately £200,000 per annum to assist with the running costs of the new leisure centre at Bar End. However, the plans for a Winchester ice rink follow a number of failed bids to bring ice rinks to the south coast. In 2013, Eastleigh Borough Council shelved plans for a new rink on viability grounds. Developer Colin Warburg also submitted plans to build a £10 million ice rink in Southampton back in 2010, only for them to fall through 2 years later due to lack of funding.
Over to Noel for the second headline story.
Yes, local legend lights up city at Switch On. Even rain couldn't dampen the party atmosphere at Winchester's annual festive Switch On last week. Chestnuts roasted over an open fire by the Buttercross, Slade blaring from speakers outside Cafe Nero, and the whole of Winchester High Street was packed as the city prepared for the local legend and big issue seller Kevin Colick to press the button that would see Winchester's Christmas lights brighten up the medieval city. Appearing on stage in the Broadway dressed as a Christmas tree, complete with fairy lights, Kev said the world would be a better place if we all help each other before then pushing down on the big red plunger with help from members of the cast from this year's panto Peter Pan. Kev said that the experience had been absolutely brilliant and that he felt honoured to take up the role. He said to be voted in front of all the stars and local people was overwhelming. He added, "I would like to thank everyone who voted for me, and I hope I didn't disappoint." The event, hosted by Winchester BID, featured a programme of music and dance, as well as performances from Winchester Musicals and Opera Society, the Pilgrims School Chamber Choir, and local dance troupe Integrate. And the article is accompanied by lots of photographs of happy, smiling people singing and dancing.
Over to Jane for the third headline story,
which is Planners Back Scheme for New Arts Building. Controversial plans have been approved to build a new art block at a Winchester sixth form college, despite objections from dozens of angry residents. The proposals for Peter Simmons College in Owens Road, Full Flood, were unanimously approved by members of Winchester City Council's Planning Committee, with members expressing reluctant support after receiving nearly 100 objections from neighbours and nearby residents. The decision means the existing changing rooms and cycle storage blocks on the southern part of the Sixth Form College's campus will be demolished to make way for the new 11-metre-tall, two-storey art faculty building. Among the criticisms of the plans were noise from students closer to residential properties, pedestrian access and parking, and whether this was the right location for the new block. Other complaints included the development being overbearing and out of keeping with the character of the area. Vice Principal David Cartwright said, "Peter Simmons makes a hugely positive contribution to Winchester. This isn't about increasing students, it's about improving facilities. The college has heard public needs. The proposal seeks to minimise the impact. There were no objections from the council's environmental health officer." Amended plans submitted as part of the proposal saw a pedestrian access route removed in a bid to mitigate the development's impact. However, Dr. Christian Martins of nearby Cranworth Road told councillors last Thursday, "Peter Simmons now has 4,000 students. People who live on the roads find the influx is just tolerable. The new building changes that." Councillor Ian Tate, Conservative member for the St. Michael ward, said, "I share the concerns of residents who feel that this is not in the right place. Reluctantly, I'm going to support the application. I'm sympathetic to the applicant who has done all they've been asked to." Councillor Kim Gottlieb added, "I have reservations. Peter Simmons is a superb establishment, and if the facilities are not up to scratch, then we should do something about that. But, like Councillor Tate, I'm in the position of having to reluctantly support the proposal." Speaking after the plans were given the go-ahead, Adam Clark Williams of Cranworth Road, and speaking on behalf of a number of residents, said, "The residents are very angry but not surprised. What kind of endorsement is reluctant approval?" The outcome was decided when the council directed the college to develop a site next to our homes, but the college, which would have preferred a different site, is not blameless either. It has not been a good neighbour as it has pursued its goal. And this is accompanied by two pictures. One is a photograph of a huge group of residents, from little tiny children upwards, a lot of families, who are complaining that their life is going to be affected by the arts building. And also a plan of where the arts building is due to go, which is a very large area immediately opposite the houses, in the little family houses, in Owens Road and Hatherley Road.
And that concludes our headline stories. We'll continue with death notices, then Christian comment, followed by letters to the editor, your say, historical items, first person, Bulgarum diary, editorial comment, my Winchester, letters from Westminster, and what's on. And we'll end with items of general news. I'll start with the death notices. Bramble, Minnie Bramble, formerly of Greenhill Road, aged 102. Goodchild, Graham Goodchild, peacefully aged 70. Lockwood. Kathleen May Cathy Lockwood, aged 82. Miles, Sally Ann Miles, peacefully in hospital, aged 73. Moody, Jack Moody, aged 83. O'Leary, Patricia Pat O'Leary, formerly of Barley Down Drive Badger Farm, latterly of Brendan Care Park Road, Winchester, aged 91. Sellers, Christopher Kenyon Sellers, at the Queen Alexandra Hospital after a short illness. And finally, Smith, Joe Smith, in Malta, aged 87. And now we're going to have Christian comment read by Jane.
And Christian comment is rather appropriately, so are you ready for Christmas? I have to confess, says Rosemary A. Baker, we are not, although I have made a start. We have just returned from our annual 2 weeks in Scotland, and in the past, when I was working, this was an opportunity to shop for Christmas, and so we have done the same again. As well as providing us with some different gifts, it's also very easy when we see something we like to say we can have it for Christmas. The shops have been displaying their wares for some time now, and Christmas sales and fairs are being advertised. These are often to raise money for charity, as now are many Christmas cards, so there is a bit of altruism mixed with our selfishness. Every magazine I have opened over the last few weeks has had an envelope for Crisis at Christmas, to provide a donation for homeless person to have a meal at Christmas. Yesterday, in our local Waitrose, we observed that all three of the charity token boxes were labelled for those isolated at Christmas. Sadly, we reflected Christmas might be the only time they were not isolated. This morning on the television there was a discussion about when was the right time to put up the Christmas decorations. Most people agreed that the beginning of December was about the right time, but that it did depend to some extent on household requirements and family tradition. On the programme, they had a psychotherapist who confirmed that research showed that preparing for Christmas, for example, by putting up decorations, raised mood in 75% of people, making them feel happy. This was felt to be because of past happy memories that people were reminded of. Obviously, for 25%, the opposite was the case. Interestingly, it was found that those putting up their decorations earlier were found to be more friendly. This month's National Geographic magazine has The Search for Happiness on its front cover, and inside there is a lead article on the world's happiest places. Denmark, Costa Rica and Singapore are the countries where people are happiest. There people feel secure, have a sense of purpose, and enjoy lives that minimise stress and maximise joy. Research also shows that religion has a positive effect on happiness. The reasons for this include a sense of belonging, a sense of meaning in life, and a greater ability to exercise self-control. When times are difficult, people turn to religion as they find their beliefs give them a greater sense of well-being. And so, let the Christmas preparations begin, for whether religious or not, we might increase our happiness and that of others. That was Rosemary A. Baker.
We'll continue with the letters to the editor. If you wish to contact the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so by telephoning 01962 860 836. Or you can email news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or you can write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO238AL. Now, there are 17 letters this week, and we'll start with one read by Heather.
Anne Gildersleeve says, crazy idea. Sir, whoever thought of diverting the A34 through the new Barton Farm estate must be absolutely mad. Everyone knows what a busy road it is, with many enormous lorries, and there are quite often problems. I would not want to buy a house on the new estate with all that heavy traffic coming through. Also, this comes at a time when parents are being encouraged to get their children to walk to school. It would make their journey rather unsafe. I do hope that the campaign to keep the Andover Road open is successful. Good luck. Mrs. Anne Gildersleeve, Cripstead Lane, St. Cross, Winchester.
and M.A. Rich talks about common sense. Sir, recent reports of further thoughts on Andover Road North gives hope that common sense will prevail. However, it was your correspondent 2 weeks ago who put his finger on the cause of all this. As I understand it, the developers were to make available land for additional playing fields for Henry Beaufort School. The problem is that such land will be on the opposite side of Andover Road North, thus requiring pupils to cross that road. The easiest way to avoid that was, of course, for the Highways Authority to persuade the developers to build a road through the estate, which can take the traffic, enabling Andover Road North to be closed. That saves the Education Authority the cost of a bridge or subway. As your previous correspondent pointed out, those authorities are the same, Hampshire County Council. The idea of diverting a B road through an estate is planning folly. The obvious solution, a bridge probably being too expensive, is an underpass for the pupils. It would probably cost little more than the improvement suggested under the current plan for Andover Road North. Time has moved on. There is now talk of a park and ride service at Three Maids Hill. Whilst in theory this should reduce traffic, the practical experiences of Romsey Road and St Cross Road, after the park and rides had been built, leads one to doubt this. Assuming buses every 10 minutes, bus traffic would increase from 2 per hour to 8 per hour each way. The further problem is that this route to the city centre is the best of all, leading directly to the station, car parks, etc. Commercial traffic uses it rather than Eastern Lane or Chesil Street. Now we have the redevelopment of the barracks. Clearly it would be impossible to refuse permission for development, whether commercial, domestic or the new hospital. It will create more traffic for Andover Road. Is it too much to hope that sense will be seen? M.A. Rich, Hickory Drive, Hairstock, Winchester.
And on the same theme, Paul Twelvetree writes, persevering. Sir, in your article highlighting my continuing campaign to save the Andover Road, star, you quoted Lib Dem Councillor Weir as describing it as political grandstanding. What a load of rubbish. This has been a deliberately low-key campaign to change people's minds about the fact that the road will be closed. It is slowly bearing fruit in that most people I talk to, both within the city and county councils, as well as members of the public, now agree that the plan to close the road is utter madness and should be stopped. It has taken me 3 years to get to this stage, and there are problems to be overcome, not least the planning consent for Barton Farm, but I will persevere. Maybe Councillor Weir and the other Lib Dem councillors shouldn't be so quick to give up on the residents of North Winchester and should come on board instead of only going for the easy solutions to easy problems and playing Guildhall politics with people's lives. This scheme will cause misery to the residents of Hairstock, Week, Berwick, as local roads are turned into rat runs. And let's not forget the residents of Barton Farm, who will have to endure heavy traffic with noise, vibration and pollution adjacent to their houses. A priority of mine is also to make sure that children and students get safely to school. That isn't going to be made any safer by having to cross a busy main road running through the centre of a housing estate. And one solution to crossing the Andover Road to get to Henry Beaufort safely could be a footbridge. Not political grandstanding, but serving local residents. Perhaps Councillor Weir ought to try it. And that was from Paul Twelvetree, Save the Andover Road.
And in the same area, but on a slightly different topic, Harry W.S. Ree writes about little boxes. Sir, Derek Hickman's letter regarding the uniformity of houses at Barton Farm brings to mind Malvina Reynolds' 1962 hit song, Little Boxes, All Made of Ticky-Tacky and All Look the Same. Many would say the lyrics are as relevant to estate management today as when the song was written and became a hit here and in the USA, where it was recorded by several well-known singers. Malvina Reynolds' original version can still be listened to on YouTube. Harry W.S. Ree, Compton.
Susan Chester says, stop building. Sir, Our city is growing fast, with new communities currently under construction at Kings Barton and Pitt, adding hundreds of new households with thousands of new residents, and there are more planned. This is putting huge pressure on the compact city centre, already crowded with day visitors to our historic sites. The Winchester Movement Strategy merely states, Hampshire County Council and Winchester City Council are working closely to ensure that individual developments, their combined effects, and the strategy inform each other as required. Weasel words. It also admits that changes to traffic patterns will take up to 20 years and that funding is extremely limited. The situation needs addressing now. Should there not be a moratorium on developments until the city can sensibly accommodate them? Increased motor traffic in the city centre is already a problem, producing both delays and pollution, and making walking and cycling unpleasant, even unsafe, and it will only get worse if nothing is done. I think we need to reduce traffic in the centre as much as possible. For a start, why is there no park and ride service on the northern side of the city? Is there no way that bus services can be improved and made cheaper for everyone, not just pensioners? And can we make cycling less of an effort, even for the unfit? I have a fantasy of a bike lift up the woods to St Giles Hill, for instance. Sleepers Hill also, anyone? The south-north traffic route via St George's Street and City Road has long been terrible, a real blot on the city. I wonder what alternatives have been put forward. Please, councillors and officials, get creative. Susan Chesters, Doman Road, Winchester.
And Jenny Stables write, Cars the problem. Sir, I'm sorry that Keith Webb letters November the 9th feels as if mobility rights are being threatened by a vociferous cycling lobby, and I can understand his heart sinking when he as a driver gets stuck behind a cyclist on the road. But I can assure him that motorised traffic causes much more inconvenience to cyclists than vice versa. Cyclists cannot feel unwelcome on paths shared with pedestrians and vulnerable on roads shared with fast or heavy traffic. So where are we supposed to ride? Constantly expanding and improving provision for cars at the expense of every other form of transport is not a sensible way to address the needs of an ever-growing population. When many thousands of people were expected in London for the turn-of-the-century celebrations, cars were banned from the city and public transport made free. We don't have to just keep on doing what we've been doing. Well-thought-out solutions can meet the needs of old and young, fit or disabled. We just need the political will. And that was from Jenny Stables, Gordon Avenue, Highcliffe, Winchester.
Stuart Keither writes, Vigilantes, sir. The city seems to be suffering from a rash of speed camera vigilantes. Have the Lib Dems got so little to cover in their newsletter that we are obliged to have Councillor Hiscock in a high-vis jacket on Worthy Road? I do hope the police will publish the guidance or instruction they have given to this putative extension of their workforce, as they occupy valid parking spaces, pavements with equipment, and handle the processing and storage of the resulting data. At the very least, I would hope that space on the police servers would be made available. Their presence always makes me smile, as the current mono focus on speed in terms of traffic management is completely bonkers. In March 2013, whilst travelling at around 60 miles an hour in a slow-moving dual queue on North Walls, a female student stepped off the pavement with her back to the traffic, wearing headphones, of course, and tore my wing mirror completely off with her swinging bag. I beg your pardon, I misread that. This poor driver was only going at 6 miles an hour. I thought 60 was a bit much. So he was going down North Walls at 6 miles an hour and a student stepped off the pavement with her back to him and she'd got headphones on and his wing mirror got torn off when she banged it with her bag. It was within 75 yards, clear sight of the old police station lay-by, a vigilante hotspot. And if only I'd had the distraction of seeing the posse up ahead and not paid attention to the narrow pavements, I might have failed to swerve away from actually hitting the pedestrian. As traffic now slows to a crawl over the next few weeks, and they can reflect on a job well done, I feel the least we can do to thank all for this important work in taking time out of their busy lives is perhaps to wave or offer to purchase some books from their Christmas reading list. Stuart Keir, Courtney Road, Winchester.
Chris Gillam writes about futile road building, and it's another reaction to Keith Webb's letter last week. Sir, Keith Webb has largely ignored the central matter of my letter, and without engaging in argument, merely indulges in an ad hominem assault. Chronicle Letters, November the 9th. My letter was about the proven futility of major road building, its unproven, indeed certainly false, claim to economic benefit, its malign effect on habitats, landscapes, heritage and health, its irresponsible undermining of climate change commitments, and its British refusal to recognise that it cannot endure. To none of this was Mr. Webb able or willing to give an answer. It's this failure of imagination, this harking back to a 1960s belief that the planet could be abused forever and that we owe no kind of future to our grandchildren, that must make Keith Webb so fondly cite Adolf Hitler as an example of the right way to do things. He simply cannot see the consequences. He points to the recent diversion of traffic on the M3 through Winchester due to an act of antisocial behaviour, without realising that it ought logically to have put into his mind the question, why have we allowed the habit of traffic growth to the extent that it cannot be coped with except by encouraging more of it, through ever-increasing capacity, never solving but only worsening the problem? Less disturbing, but more laughable than his enthusiasm for Hitler, is his Mr. Toad-like poop-poop expostulation on cyclists getting in the way of his car. Why should a single person in a car, already highly subsidised when true costs of motoring are taken into account, expect not only to have more space than a non-polluting, less intimidating, much less dangerous cyclist, but to somehow have priority over him or her? Fortunately, the young are beginning to question this assumed superiority of those who have had their own way for so long. The astonishing turnout and energy of the Taking Cycling Seriously meeting in Winchester earlier this month gives cause for hope for change. Chris Gillam, Upper High Street, Winchester.
And Captain John Aston writes, congratulations, sir. I congratulate the council and its contractors on how immaculately the lawn surrounding the lines of Commonwealth War Graves Commission graves in West Hill Cemetery off St James's Lane is maintained. One such grave is of a major, aged 50, and nearby is the naval grave of a boy, second class, aged 15. They will not be forgotten. And that was from Captain John Aston, RN, Christchurch Road, Winchester.
Terence Butler writes a tribute to Ken, and this is accompanied by a picture of the late Ken Thorber. Sir, I was saddened to read in the Chronicle that Ken Thorber had died following an illness. From 1988 to 2005, I was Director of Social Services in Hampshire, responsible for adult social care and childcare services. For the latter 6 years of that period, Ken was the leader of the County Council. Not only was he a very skilful politician, branded the Silver Fox by many of his fellow councillors, he was a thoroughly nice man, warm and personable, always willing to listen to others and imbued with great integrity. He had a soft spot for social care and always supported me and, more importantly, the front line of social services whenever he had the opportunity, often putting people before politics to assist the less advantaged. He was exceptional in promoting partnerships across Hampshire's agencies and, strongly supported by his wife Lynn, would attend many events to back the collaborative work of the Social Services Department and its staff. More recently, Emmaus Hampshire, now providing accommodation, employment, development and support to 28 former homeless people, owes much to Ken's leadership in ensuring we were provided with the site for our facilities and the assistance of County Council staff, which continues today. Just one of many examples of Ken's legacy in the voluntary sector across the county. Hampshire was most fortunate to have Ken as its leader, a model politician and a true gentleman. Terence Butler, CBEMA, Chairman, Emmaus, Hampshire, Bar End, Winchester.
Well, Keith Webb obviously caused something of a storm. Here's another reaction to him from Sue Coles, who says, cyclists as important as motorists. Sir, many cyclists were disappointed to read Keith Webb's letter in the Chronicle, and in particular his lack of tolerance. Most Winchester streets are narrow and must be shared equally by pedestrians, cyclists and motor traffic, with each group showing respect to the others. On some streets it may be possible to create uphill cycle lanes, but this will require space to be taken from motor traffic. Narrow off-carriageway facilities shared with pedestrians are not the answer. In terms of fitness, I'm pretty certain that most cyclists are much fitter and healthier than the average motorist. It does not help the transport debate to show such intolerance. Given the current consultation on the Winchester Movement Strategy, we must recognise that non-motorised modes of transport are an important part of the mix, particularly in urban areas. And that's from Sue Coles, Secretary, Winchester CTC, part of Cycling UK, Ruffield Close, Hairstock.
And Rachel Jones writes, lack of vision. Sir, I have two children who love gymnastics and ice skating. Currently, Winchester doesn't have these facilities, and I have to travel to Basingstoke and Southampton. On reading earlier in the week that there are serious plans of having an Olympic-sized ice rink in Winchester, we were ecstatic. It's just a shame that Winchester City Council doesn't seem to have the vision. The ice rink in Basingstoke is falling apart, and any ice skater showing potential moves to Guildford or Bracknell to train, as the facilities are so inadequate. It would be amazing if Winchester was able to replace it, along with a chance to hold the British Championship here and create future champions. I wrote to the City Council 4 months ago about ensuring they included in their plans a permanently fully equipped gymnasium for potential competition gymnasts. I am still in hope of them replying. Currently, they seem to be only lifting what sports facilities they have and relocating them. They aren't building for the future or looking at other sports waiting lists in surrounding areas. Otherwise, they would definitely put in a gymnasium. Southampton and Andover now have British champions. Wouldn't it be good if Winchester did as well? And that was from Rachel Jones, Orchard Close, South Wanston.
And we're back to the roads. Mr. Simpson writes about road disruption. Sir, on Saturday, November the 4th, someone had authorised St George's Street in Winchester to be closed at 2015 to 2100 hours, so it's 8:15 to 9 in the evening, across the road from McDonald's. For I presume the people coming back from the firework display to meet the ridiculous health and safety rules that we have. Did they not stop and think of the major problems this would cause with the traffic? I had the inconvenience of sitting in the resulting gridlock of traffic further back in St George's Street for 40 minutes, unable to move. Firstly, where were the warning signs for this closure? I did not see any when entering the city from the Winnell Estate. And secondly, why not close the road at Friarsgate by El Sabio's so you could choose an alternative route, rather than trapping you in the traffic? Mr. Simpson, Manor Close, Winnell, Winchester.
Russell Webb, no relation to Keith Webb, I hope, calls for tougher sentences. Sir, I notice that someone has been fly-tipping at the Romsey Road end of Woodman Lane, where a substantial quantity of rubbish has been dumped in the entrance to a field. The penalties for this behaviour are far too lenient, and a greater deterrent needs to be introduced to reduce the frequency of this antisocial behaviour. I would propose that the perpetrators, if caught, should be made to pay the clean-up costs, have their vehicle used to fly-tip impounded and crushed, banned from driving for 5 years, and fined a minimum of £10,000. Russell Webb, Woodman Lane, Sparsholt.
And Sue Jessop writes, basic flaws. Sir, with reference to your article, New Basics Bank, in last week's paper, maybe the experience of opening this extra food bank in Winchester will help our MP, Steve Brine, understand the dire consequences of his government's flawed benefit system. Universal credit has been widely criticised. Disability entitlement has been reduced by his government and benefits frozen, all of which have contributed to more referrals to food banks. Low pay is also a factor. It is shocking to hear of nurses needing to use food banks since their pay has fallen so much in real terms. Many low-pay workers need universal credit to top up their income. According to this week's BBC Money Box, since there will be five paydays in December, thousands of people's monthly income will be over the threshold for them to get some or any of their in-work benefits next month, just before Christmas. An unjust and unnecessary six-week wait to receive benefit has been built into the universal credit system, with the result that many become destitute. Last month, Theresa May finally bowed to Labour pressure and scrapped the extortionate UC helpline charges of up to 55 pence per minute. However, Steve Brine, along with almost all of his Tory colleagues, didn't support a sensible proposal for the rollout of universal credit to new areas of the country to be paused until its problems have been ironed out. Indeed, according to theyworkforyou.com, Steve Brine has voted in Parliament on more than 50 occasions to reduce spending on welfare benefits, including cutting benefits for many people in paid work. Basics banks provide invaluable support, but it is appalling that government policies have made them necessary throughout the country and that we need ever more to meet demand. And that was from Sue Jessop, Fordington Road, Full Flood, Winchester.
Robin Atkins raises his concerns about North Alresford Town Council. Answers needed. Sir, the external auditors, BDO, have issued a very critical, qualified opinion about the new Alresford Town Council accounts to March the 31st, 2017. This is the sixth year running that BDO have done this. Their current opinion qualified the accounts on five issues. One, the internal auditor made a number of serious recommendations which stated that the Town Council had breached proper practices and regulations, exposing it to risks associated with these weaknesses. This is unacceptable. Two, the annual return required many amendments as it was wrongly prepared. This must not happen again. Three, the council did not undertake proper or adequate budget monitoring during the financial year, so no useful comparison between the budget headings could be undertaken. Four, the display of the accounts with BDO report was not done by September the 30th, 2017, as is required by law. Five, the Alresford Recreation Centre lacked control of its bar, purchases, staff costs, and there was no business plan. The Alresford Recreation Centre was run by the Wichard family. Bill Wichard is now a town councillor. Under the auspices of the council's current chair, Margot Power, who approved every payment to the Alresford Recreation Centre bar. The new RFO, financial officer, who was well qualified, was appointed by the North Alresford Town Council in May 2017. He no longer works for the North Alresford Town Council, and the clerk refuses to give any detail re this matter, nor whether the Town Council will appoint another financial officer to ensure it complies with the financial and accounting requirements of a properly run Town Council. Furthermore, the Town Council refuses to answer any questions raised by the public at its monthly meetings. Robin Atkins, Lindley Gardens, Alresford.
Patrick McClure writes about a sad omission. Sir, I note with sadness that it has not occurred to the owners or residents of the new St Thomas Church developments to place a poppy wreath on the war memorial, particularly since it has been brought forward to a much more prominent position adjacent to the pavement. I hope this will be corrected for next year's centenary. Patrick McClure, Christchurch Road, Winchester.
And that concludes all of the letters to the editor for this week. Thank you very much to all of the contributors. Now, it's time for your say. After the Christmas lights switch on last Thursday, we asked people what they're looking forward to most about Christmas, and Jane's got the answers.
Oh, well, Sarah Slade, 52, housewife from Hairstock, said, "It's lovely to spend time with the family, as everyone is always so busy. My husband works in New York a lot, so it's nice to spend some time together. We always have lots of family around the dinner table." Lynn Mathewson, 67, retired domestic assistant of St Paul's Hill, said, "I can't put my lovely Christmas tree up because of my five-month-old kitten. Lucky! I have no doubt he will be a nightmare." Ken Weatherly, 69, retired entrepreneur from Shawford, said, "It's a wonderful family occasion. My wife will be cooking either turkey or beef, which I'm looking forward to. We don't do gifts. It's more about being all together as a family." And Jill Yates, 73, retired finance clerk from Hairstock, said, "I love everything about Christmas, especially the goodwill and the shared happiness and joy. It's a great family occasion and a time we really look forward to."
And now we're going back through the mist of time into our dusty old files for the historical news items. And we'll start with 25 years ago, and it's read by Heather.
Friday, November the 20th, 1922. And there are two items from the files. Gerald Malone, MP for Winchester and Alton, has entered the row on bank interest rates. He has written to Chancellor Norman Lamont, claiming he has evidence from a businessman in the constituency that cuts in base interest rates will not help a number of local businesses. Mr. Malone said the policy being operated by National Westminster Bank in the case of a small business borrower in Winchester was little short of scandalous. He writes, "I have seen a letter from the bank, dated October the 16th, offering to renew facilities which are comfortably secured against my constituents' home. It is bad enough that the bank is charging a rate of base rate plus 5%, but the bank has imposed a minimum rate of 13%. According to Mr. Malone, the recent 1% base rate fall announced in the autumn statement would bring no benefit to his constituents. I am outraged that after all the efforts made by the Chancellor to bring interest rates down by 4% since September, the full benefits are not being felt by hard-pressed businesses." And the second item, a Kingsworthy pensioner who lost two bags of Christmas gifts has thanked the Hampshire Chronicle for its help in recovering some of the items. An article in last week's paper highlighted the plight of Vera Bond of Pound Road, who was distraught after £130 worth of gifts went missing from her flat. She had collected the presents throughout the year for her large family. She thought she might have mistakenly given them to a friend who was collecting for a jumble sale. But a thorough search of all the jumble failed to locate the articles, which were wrapped in Christmas paper. However, on Saturday, Mrs. Bond received a telephone call from the jumble sale organisers saying that a hand-knitted jumper and other items had been found a week after the sale. So some of the presents found were then able to be returned to Mrs. Bond.
Go back 50 years now, Noel.
Yes, two items from Saturday, November the 25th, 1967. Tributes were paid to Miss Helen Roxburgh, who is to retire at the end of term after being headmistress of Winchester County High School for Girls for 16 years at a buffet organised by the Old Girls Association on Saturday evening. Presenting Miss Roxburgh with an armchair, a brooch, a cheque and a bouquet of flowers, Miss Dorothy Crosby, chairman of the association, said that although she had never been a pupil under Miss Roxburgh, her kindness had still given her that wonderful feeling of being part of the school. Mr. Edwin Littlecott, formerly Deputy Education Officer for Hampshire, said he very much respected Miss Roxburgh and what she had done for the school, which stood for best in education. And the other item, on the eve of devaluation, Rear Admiral Morgan Giles, MP for Winchester, delivered a biting attack on the government for their home and foreign policies, labour relations, tax, government spending and defence. He said, added up to the fact that the country was in grave difficulties. Admiral Morgan Giles was speaking to the St Thomas's Ward Conservative Association on Friday last week.
Jane's taking us back 100 years.
And 100 years ago was Saturday, November the 24th, 1917. The head constable wishes to state that the food controller has found it necessary to obtain a census of all livestock and a return of the requirements of feeding stuffs from all stock owners. The returns and census are to be made as for December the 2nd next, and all persons concerned should have forms in their possession before that date. The head constable has also asked us to draw attention to paragraph 7 of the Tobacco Restriction Order, number 2, 1917, which sets forth that a schedule of retail tobacco prices must be displayed in a conspicuous position in a shop, bar, store, or place where tobacco is sold. This provision also applies to hotels and public houses. And the second little item. Following the successful tea and entertainment given by the Sisters of Independent Order of Good Templars in St Morris's Hall a fortnight ago, the concert part of the programme was, by request, repeated at the Winchester Infirmary before a gathering of wounded soldiers on Thursday evening of last week, when a most enjoyable time was spent. The following programme was given. Song, The River of Years, Mrs Wolfrey's. Recitation, Mrs. Coxon. Dance, the Mrs. Hamblin and Hawkins. Song, Mrs. Rowbotham. Song, Miss Hayter. Scotch Reel, the Mrs. Hamblin and Hawkins. Song, Mrs. Smith. Duet, the Mrs. Clements and Hawkins. Sketch, Mrs. Williams and Miss Clements. Song, Miss Hayter. Dance, the Mrs. Hamblin and Hawkins, and dance Private Burn.
Let's go back 200 years now, Heather.
When November the 24th fell on a Monday in 1817. We feel it is our duty to give our readers a particular account of the manner in which Wednesday, a day of trial and rebuke indeed, was observed in this city. And we have a melancholy satisfaction in such things as the testimony of veneration and love borne to the memory of our departed princess, which must be soothing to the feelings of every virtuous British heart, reflects credit on the inhabitants of the place. Early in the morning, before it was well light, the bells of all the churches were tolled for about an hour. The bells of the cathedral were tolled muffled, which produced a very solemn effect. When it was broad day, it was gratifying sight to observe that shops of every description were closed. And the second item, as the practice of exploding, detonating balls has been very prevalent in this city, we insert the following account of an accident showing the dreadful effects of detonating powder, in the hope that it will operate as a warning to those who have indulged in this dangerous amusement. On Saturday, a boy living in Pierrepont Place, Bath, who had been in the habit of preparing detonating powder for sale, having a large quantity in a bottle, accidentally discharged it in his hand, which was so dreadfully lacerated that it is feared amputation will be necessary. He was also wounded in various parts of his body.
And it's back to the present because Noel has got first person written by George Hayter.
Yes, George Hayter writes about a chap I met at the switch-on. It happened because I bumped into him as I made my way through the crowd. I apologised to the stranger. A big man, he generously joked that his girth had made our collision inevitable. We were both making our way down the crowded high street to watch the annual switch-on of the Christmas lights. Outsiders are attracted to Winchester by the switch-on, but this year was the first when fate presented an opportunity for me to strike up a conversation with one of the visitors. And the stranger and I did have a good talk. He was apparently an elderly foreigner, apparently in the UK on a business trip. He said he was making time to attend the Winchester switch-on so that he could learn more about the way we celebrate Christmas in this country. He was reluctant to say much about his work, but I did gather that he was in the distribution industry. He was in Hampshire on a reconnaissance trip, looking for ways to streamline his operations at point of delivery. He said his organisation had a lot of work over Christmas. He was a jolly character, with a beard and sparkling eyes. He looked as though he knew how to enjoy a good dinner and a glass or two. We got onto the subject of pets. He didn't know the English word for them, but the description of his animals made them sound a bit like small horses. I think he was trying to tell me one of them had a sore nose. There was a great atmosphere as switch-on time approached, and the crowd continued to grow. People were chattering excitedly, and the music was loud. I didn't catch everything the foreigner said, but he seemed full of compliments for Winchester. He said children here were well-behaved. He had strong views on British architecture. He liked our chimneys, and he approved of the flat roofs on many of our buildings. I never did find out what country he was from. When I asked about that, he just said it was the Northland. He repeated, in his European, possibly Scandinavian accent, that his homeland was Lot Cold. I know he had a lot of aviation experience, and it sounded like he usually had to take off in the dark. I asked what he thought of Brexit. Wouldn't be a problem for him, he said. Customs officers always turned a blind eye to his activities. I don't know what this means, but he said there wouldn't be time to pay on what he called his busy night. And then his belly started to shake. He was laughing at the idea of him paying a trade tariff. It was a distinctive three-syllable laugh. Meeting him really was extraordinary. He was very pleasant. He had an aura, and I really liked him. He seemed almost saintly. Unfortunately, he wouldn't say his name, but he did let slip that years ago he was known as Nicholas. By now, the foreigner and I couldn't move because of the ever-denser crowd. We were literally jammed together, so I asked a few more things. His work was seasonal, he said, and he claimed there was no money in it for him. The business involved a busy workshop and a small workforce. I was slightly concerned because he seemed too old for a high-pressure job with long hours. Apparently once a year he even has to do a night shift. I got a funny feeling that he was anxious to avoid being noticed. His tightly zipped grey cape gave the impression of being a disguise, and I'm sure I caught a glimpse of some garish red outfit he was wearing underneath. The switch-on is a couple of weeks ago now, but I still think about this nice foreigner. He had an air of celebrity about him. He looked familiar. I'm sure I've seen him somewhere before.
And it's time for an alternative look at the news, because Jane's got Belgarum Diary,
which is dealing with Brexit blues. For most people, Christmas is a time of joy and goodwill. But for families split between Brexiteers and Remainers, it could prove to be fraught and fractious. The average dining table could see Brexit-voting grandparents wanting to put the great back into Great Britain pitted against their Ramona grandchildren who feel they now have to live with the consequences of the grey vote. However, one Winchester-based group wants to put a stop to any Christmas Day disagreements. The Winchester International Network, WIN-IN, will hold a Difficult Conversations training workshop to teach people how to manage challenging topics such as Brexit. To be held at 7:30 p.m. on Tuesday, November the 28th, Winchester Rugby Club will host the session, which aims to help participants enjoy the upcoming festive season without falling out with their nearest and dearest. Organisers say the session will include opportunities to try out different ways of handling challenging Brexit-related conversations. They add that the free event could help you have a more positive outcome in your Brexit interactions and is for those who support the Stop Brexit campaign. And there is a picture of the European Union flag fluttering in front of Big Ben, which of course is not actually ringing at the moment.
Heather, let's hear what the editor has to say, please, Heather. Editorial comment.
The art of managing public expectations. Managing public expectations is one of the skills of political management. Winchester City Council currently has its work cut out over the proposed new leisure and sports centre at Bar End. Many people were pleased to hear that the council was considering including a 50-metre swimming pool in the scheme, joining only a couple of dozen in the whole country. When the scale of that ambition became clear, it understandably encouraged other sports groups to also propose improved facilities that they would be able to use. Now it looks as if the senior councillors are scaling down their ambitions. Hence the suggestion that a 12-court sport hall should be reduced to 8. There is concern that the council may be getting cold, if not wet, feet over the 50-metre swimming pool proposal, which would be a massive blow to sports lovers and to those who predict it will spark heightened interest in keeping fit. Something similar happened when the splendid 400-metre athletics track was opened before the London 2012 Olympics. Meanwhile, Peter Simmons College has won approval for its new arts facility on a hitherto little-developed part of the campus. Local people are understandably upset that the college did not use other parts of its extensive site for the expansion. The college has decided to ignore public expectations, which is one way of doing things.
Now we're going to hear what a local resident thinks about his town, because it's question and answer. Noel's going to read My Winchester.
Yes, it's Matt Prince, 24, HXSX expedition leader from Sparshold, who shares his favourite things about the city. What's your favourite restaurant or cafe? The city has so many great places to eat or grab a coffee, it's hard to pick a favourite. And your favourite pub or bar? Alfie's. What's your favourite shop? The High Street has a great mix of well-recognised chains and independents. I think it's a great atmosphere and attitude that we are able to support independent brands in the city. And what's your favourite building? Ah, that has to be the cathedral. It holds a special value, as it was there my teammates and I finished our first ultra-marathon dragging car tyres from Salisbury in aid of MNDA. And what's your favourite view? Having lived in Sparsholt since 1999 and spending my childhood cycling round Farley Mount, the sunset view from the top of the hill looking over Southampton is amazing. Who or what is Winchester's biggest icon? It has to be the statue of King Alfred. Everyone can instantly recognise the city from just that. And what's the Winchester's best-kept secret? That has to be the River Itchen. Nothing beats a crisp morning run out along the river in superb scenery. And what's the best thing about Winchester? Winchester has a great mix between inner city spaces and parks to local footpaths, nature reserves and countryside parks. And the worst? The parking. If there was one thing you could change about Winchester, what would it be? Better parking. Describe Winchester in a sentence. The perfect mix of a friendly and vibrant atmosphere for all the family rolled into one of the most historic cities in England.
We've got two letters from Westminster this week. Let's have a look at the first one, please, Jane.
And the first one is from Steve Brine. And he says, an MP's post bag can be a revealing snapshot of what constituents feel passionate about. Mine is no different, but its contents may surprise you. One of the topics people have written to me about most these past 7 years is bees. It's a subject I've taken an interest in, and I would recommend A World Without Bees by Alison Benjamin for your Christmas list, if you dare. Meeting a number of environment secretaries and supportive MPs over the course of the last three parliaments, I've ensured the Protect the Pollinators voice is heard. So, it's good news that Michael Gove has now backed new restrictions on harmful pesticides. He clearly recognises that without a healthy pollinator population, we risk the whole ecological balance. As someone who joined Friends of the Earth many years ago, I was pleased to see its chief executive praise Mr. Gove for listening to the experts and taking action. It's been a busy few months for the new Environment Secretary, who also announced plans to consult on a new independent body for environmental standards to deliver a green Brexit and pledged action to reduce plastic waste choking our oceans. Two mailbag favourites there. More than 1 million birds and over 100,000 other sea mammals and turtles die every year from eating and getting tangled in plastic waste. So we will specifically look at taxes and charges to help prevent pollution and protect the environment. This work will form a major part of the government's 25-year environment plan. And following an extremely positive reaction to our consultation this summer, we will enshrine into law that CCTV will be required in every slaughterhouse where live animals are present. It really has been a flying start for the rehabilitated Michael Gove. It has been a busy month locally too, as I have visited a number of businesses and charities keeping me right up to date. I was especially pleased to drop into the Winchester Church's Night Shelter annual general meeting last week, where we saw them presented with the richly deserved Queen's Award for Voluntary Service. At the Remembrance Sunday service in Winchester Cathedral, I was moved as always and struck by the sermon given by the Right Reverend Nigel Stock, former Bishop to the Forces. "Blessed are the peacemakers," he said, reminding us that peace is no accident in today's dangerous world. "I wish all local shops and businesses a successful and Christmas period. Let's make it a record year." Steve Brine, MP for Winchester and Chandler's Ford.
Let's have the second letter from Westminster, please, Heather.
This is from George Hollingberry. "Like many people, I like a good sci-fi film. Of course, predicting the future is fraught with problems, and many a movie maker doesn't do a great job of getting it right. Take Terminator or Logan's Run for just two examples, though it's great fun to watch. Super robots bent on human destruction is often the theme of these films. However, in a classic case of life imitating art, a true story along those lines, but definitely more super robot than Doomsday, is just years away and could fundamentally change our world. Artificial intelligence, AI, is already affecting us in bigger and bigger ways, and I see no reason why it will not grow in influence. The media is keen on how driverless cars will need to function, and this is certainly true, as it's not possible to program a car to deal with every scenario, so it will have to learn from experience. A scary thought for many. But clearly there's also quite a bit more to artificial intelligence than just getting us about. What it can do, and the prospect that something which can learn could perhaps become more intelligent than its creator, is as little as 20 years away. The scope for AI to aid in the search for a cancer cure is a great example of what it could achieve, but we must look very soon at how it will be used and the limits and scope of that use. Already, complex internet algorithms know more about our interests or shopping habits than our best friends, and some are concerned about this. Robots can build a home, and research from MACE predicts that 600,000 United Kingdom construction jobs could be lost by 2040, as advances in robotics, driven by digital technology, gathers pace. There are presently around 73,000 bricklayers in the country. If this fourth industrial revolution occurs, there might be only 4,300 in a few years' time. No one needs a crystal ball to see all this will pose real challenges and incredible opportunities for societies, for governments, and for legislators across the globe. The present government knows the possibilities of AI, and much work is being done, but this is far-reaching stuff, not as yet formed and seismic in its ability to reshape our world. My view is that some of the best minds on this planet are presently working on this revolution, and the United Kingdom needs to remain in the forefront of research. We have the high technology industrial base and the educational excellence to play a big part, and we should. In tandem, politicians will have to help frame what can and cannot be achieved by artificial intelligence to make the most of this technology for the good of everyone. Robots will not destroy the world. That's the stuff of sci-fi. But it will change it, and everyone must be prepared. George Hollingberry, Parliamentary Private Secretary to the Prime Minister, Member of Parliament for Meon Valley.
Now, let's have a look at a few things that are on. What's on? Mainly, it's Theatre Royal Winchester December the 5th to the January the 1st as the traditional annual pantomime, and it's Peter Pan. Yes, for further details about that, I'll give you a telephone number later. But it's on different times, because on December the 6th, there's also Lance Ellington Sings Broadway. Now, Lance Ellington is one of those amazing four singers behind all of the dances on Strictly Come Dancing, and they do a lovely covers of some of the songs. Also, on the 13th of December at the Theatre Royal, there's a programme called Carols by Candlelight, and that's on December the 13th at 7:30 p.m. Lance Ellington's also at 7:30 p.m. If you want to look at what's on at Theatre Royal, there's a box office number here, 01962 840 440. And the other thing, December the 6th, a big clash with Lance Ellington, at 7:45 in Itchen Abbas Village Hall, there's the Christmas concert with audience participation if you want to, and it's £10 on the night with food and drink. A lighting up time ends on Friday the 24th of November at 7:36 a.m. and begins at 4:07 p.m. On Wednesday the 29th of November, it ends at 7:44 and begins at 4:03 p.m. You may notice that we're getting much less light as the year goes on. Now, if you know someone who's sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you receive from us, please telephone Irene Dowding on 01962 870 370. And if there's a problem with your Sapphire player, please try plugging it in and recharging before returning it as faulty. Now, turn and do further items of general news, and we'll start with one read by Noel.
Yes, the headline is Stolen Milk Float Found by Dog Walker. A stolen milk float of incalculable value has been found. The vehicle belonging to a Hampshire farmer was taken from his yard on the morning of November the 16th. The priceless antique milk float belonged to Jack Martin and was in use from the 1920s. But it was taken from Beacon Hill Farm on Warnford Road, Exton, in the Meon Valley, leaving the family devastated by its loss. Now Mr. Martin has said it's been found 20 miles away on a secluded road by a local dog walker. He said it's absolutely fabulous. It's a great way to start the day. We've got several calls all at once. People had woken up and seen it. Thieves had taken it and just left it. There's absolutely no damage. It was obviously too hot to handle. We hitched it up and brought it back. It's just kept in the yard, which is miles away from anywhere, but it will definitely be locked up from now on. Mr. Martin added, we've never had it valued, but it's worth a hell of a lot to us. It was designed for my great-grandfather that used to build them here, and there are about 20 of them, but they were all sold off. So if anyone else has one, we'd love to buy it. They haven't been in use for about 40 years when electric floats came in. Mr. Martin added, they left it right on the edge of Borley Green. They must have hitched it to a car and then decided it wasn't worth it after all. After all the media attention and the people sharing it. So we're very appreciative. It was found on Crow's Nest Road, and there's a picture of the yellow and green milk float with Tom Parker written across the side, and then in big red letters on the side it says, direct from our own farms.
And here we have big boost to bus travel from Winchester to Alton. Travelling by bus in the Winchester area is about to get a lot easier with the introduction of more services and the unveiling of 6 new double-decker buses at an event at Winchester Science Centre and Planetarium. Stagecoach South has invested over £1 million introducing 6 new double-decker buses for its Winchester 64 route. The 64 links Winchester City Centre along the A31 with Alsford, Ropley, Four Marks to Alton. And the new additional buses will allow Stagecoach to provide extra journeys at evenings and double the number of buses on Sundays and public holidays, with a bus every hour. The new British-built low-emissions Enviro 400 MMC vehicles include USB charging points at every seat, free Wi-Fi and luxury seating. Stagecoach Managing Director Edward Hodgson said, it's fantastic to not only be launching new buses on the Route 64, but to be improving the timetable at the same time. The route is very direct, almost the same way you would drive to Winchester in your car. But travelling by bus, you don't need to worry about finding a place to park, and you can use the journey to catch up online with our free Wi-Fi and USB charging sockets. With the increase in evening journeys, especially at this time of year, people can go out and enjoy an evening with friends without worrying about driving home. Mr. Hodgson said it is also cheaper by bus too, with the Night Rider ticket, which allows unlimited travel on any stagecoach bus for £2.50 after 7 p.m. The new hourly service on Sundays makes it ideal for a family shopping trip or to enjoy a day at the Science Centre and Planetarium or visit a pub for lunch at one of the picturesque villages along the route. We believe that these improvements will encourage more people to choose the bus as their preferred mode of travel, and we hope the customers will enjoy travelling on the new buses. And there's a photograph of the large blue double-decker number 64 bus with a group of happy travellers in front of it, and four important people, the Mayor of Alton, the Deputy Mayor of Winchester, the Managing Director of Stagecoach, and the Head of Passenger Transport, and they're just cutting through a big flag which says every 30 minutes with Wi-Fi and USB, the best route between Winchester, Alsford and Alton.
Cattle winning prizes for farming couple. And there are two photographs of two cows. One very begirt with ribbons and those round things that you win when you are a cow. The two Alsford farmers are at the top of their game and are looking forward to their promising future. When Chris and Sarah Jackson, the owners of Goscombe Farm, Gundleton, entered the South East Limousine Cattle Club Commercial Herd Competition this year, they were not expecting to come away with such prestigious awards. It was the first time they'd entered that competition, and they walked away with the Heiferborn 2015 champion and Heiferborn 2017 champion. The judging involved the judges, Mrs. Mary Reynolds and Mr. John Reynolds, visiting and inspecting animals at the farms. The Jacksons' commercial success is the outcome of years of dedication and hard work, and it all started with a birthday gift list. It all began when our son Stanley asked for a calf for his 9th birthday. We deliberated on it and decided that we would buy 2 calves, one each for Stanley and our daughter Harriet. Chris came from a farming background. His dad was a livestock farmer, so he had some idea of what we were getting ourselves into. Although I had no experience, we bought 2 two-week-old Simmental Cross heifer calves, and that's where it all began, Sarah said. In the following 6 months, the herd had grown to over 30 hand-reared heifers, which then formed the base of their initial suckler herd. Chris admitted that it had grown bigger than a hobby. Over the next 10 years, the herd expanded to over 100 suckler cows, their calves, and 3 Charolais bulls. Despite their recent success, the Jackson's commercial showing venture did not start off well. The cancellation of the Alsford Agricultural Show in 2008 meant they were unable to show in their first year. However, the team weren't put off and entered again the following year, feeling readier than ever. We had a bucket and a handful of brushes, a curry comb, a dandy brush, a towel, oh, and an animal, Chris explained. The show taught us a lot, and it became an addiction once we got started. They realised they were not as well equipped as other more experienced exhibitors. As their show experience increased, so did their success. In 2012, their homebred Charolais steer Showboy won commercial champion at the Alton, Alsford and Romsey shows, with another homebred steer, Junior, achieving similar success the following year. In 2013, they decided to dabble in the pedigree classes with their Charolais, but the bar was set high as they competed against the nationally successful Mortimer's Charolais. By this point, the show kit had drastically increased. We were at the top of the commercial ladder and tapping on the pedigree door. In 2015, their British blue heifer J-Lo, who both farmers agreed was named appropriately due to her body shape, was awarded commercial champion at the New Forest Show, Alsford. The Goscombe farm owner said, "We knew we also had something special with Lady Love. And the judges at both shows must have thought so too, as she won the majority of her classes and has been awarded Supreme and three Reserve Supreme Championships with her stablemate Lexi, together winning Supreme and Reserve Supreme Interbreed Pair Championships." They're called rosettes, those round things. Now I know why they've got so many. They won all those prizes. Chris is said, "Anybody is welcome to come and have a look around our farm and meet the animals. We ensure that every animal has the best possible life while it's with us. They are both passionate about their industry and they are looking forward to what the future brings."
Hospice plans welcomed by MP. Winchester MP Steve Bryan has praised plans for a new 10-bed hospice on the site of Royal Hampshire County Hospital. As reported in the Chronicle, Hampshire Hospital's NHS Foundation Trust wants to convert the currently unused Burrell House to support patients with life-limiting illnesses and their families. With no hospice currently situated in the city, the facility aims to open its doors by early 2019. Mr. Bryan said, "For years now, people in Winchester have said we are lacking a hospice to care for adults. We have the world-leading Naomi House for children, of course, but nothing for older patients with life-limiting conditions and their families. That was never sustainable in the long term." The news that Hampshire hospitals will build on their palliative care services, already ranked outstanding, of course, by developing Burrell House into the Winchester Hospice is so very welcome. Great credit must go to the current and immediately previous leadership at Hampshire Hospitals, who I had discussed this with many times. I know a lot of work has gone on to get us to this point. £2.5 million is a lot of money, but everything about this feels right, and I know my constituents will really put their shoulders to the wheel and help us get over the line so the new facility can open on time in 2019. I'll be right there with them, and I've already told the Trust I'm fully on board and will do everything I can do to help. The bigger picture, of course, is that this is yet another positive portent for the future of the Royal Hampshire. I know the Trust is committed to our much-loved hospital and, like me, wants to see it keep and indeed develop a wider-ranging suite of inpatient, outpatient and community services on the Romsey Road site. There are plans for the new hospice to have services both on-site and in the community, including a hospice-at-home service to support patients who wish to remain at home in the last few weeks of their life, inpatient beds with en-suite facilities, and a space for day therapy and outpatient facilities. More than £2.5 million is needed to refurbish Burrell House, which the Trust hopes to raise through a fundraising campaign. More information about the hospice will be given at a free health-focused talk being held at the Winchester Guildhall on November the 28th at 6:30 p.m. when the palliative care team and executives from the Trust will speak about the end-of-life care and plans for the new hospice and the forthcoming launch of a fundraising campaign.
And here we have rail work to disrupt Christmas trains. A huge engineering project is set to affect thousands of Hampshire Rail passengers over Christmas. Buses will replace trains between Southampton Central and Southampton Airport Parkway stations during the work, which is due to start on Christmas Eve and last until New Year's Day. The line between Fareham and Southampton Central will also be closed as a result of the £8 million scheme. More than 100 engineers are planning to replace 14 sets of points, renew about 200 metres of track and replace about 6,000 metres of cabling. Rail bosses say the project will make services through the city more reliable as well as reducing the noise made by trains. But it will also result in major disruption for people planning to use the network over the Christmas break. Chris Loder, head of service strategy for South Western Railway, said, We encourage passengers to avoid travelling on Christmas Eve if they can, and to be prepared for longer journey times between Christmas and the New Year. People should check before travelling, either online or at one of our stations. Becky Lumlock, Network Rail's Route Managing Director, added, "We're investing £8 million to give our passengers in and out of Southampton more reliable journeys. The new tracks will also mean less noise for our neighbours." And this is accompanied by a photograph of a few of the 100 engineers in their bright orange outfits and white helmets struggling to deal in rather uncomfortable positions with the work on the lines, who presumably are not especially looking forward with their families to Christmas week.
Councillors warn over centre changes. This council has a proud tradition of using the nuclear option, don't risk it, was the call from one city councillor as plans for a new leisure centre in Winchester were scrutinised at a meeting earlier this week. Councillor Martin Todd told members of Winchester City Council's Overview and Scrutiny Committee that many councillors and members of the public had concerns over the choice to reduce the sports hall from a 12-court space to an 8-court one. Councillor Todd added that if the issue was not addressed before the plans were progressed, there was a risk that the project could be scuppered, leaving Winchester without a sports hall and leisure centre. As previously reported, WCC's Cabinet approved the mix of facility for the proposed Winchester Sports and Leisure Centre, which will be based at Bar End and replace the outdated River Park Leisure Centre, to include the 8-court sports hall, a 50-metre swimming pool that can be separated into two smaller pools, a learner pool and a water play area. The new centre will also have a clip and climb facility, 4 squash courts, a hydrotherapy suite and 8 treatment rooms, 2 large studios, a spin studio and 200 station gym. Councillors were told that the cost is estimated at £38 million, up from £29 million in 2015. The Chronicle has asked the council for the reasons, but it has yet to respond. The decision to build an 8-court sports hall instead of the 12-court has been slammed. Conservative Councillor Kim Gottlieb told the meeting this Cabinet decision to reduce the size of the sports hall is misguided and in many respects bewildering. We know that on the day it opens, Bar End will struggle to accommodate many of the sports and clubs, in addition to an ever-increasing number of individuals hoping to use it. He added, "We have an obligation to treat all sports in a fair and equal way. It was never the intention to build a centre that favoured swimming at the expense of other sports." These views are shared by most councillors on the Bar End Sport Committee, but the majority view has not prevailed because the 4 non-cabinet members of the committee weren't allowed to vote on any of the key decisions. Liberal Democrat Martin Todd warned, "All major projects that have gone wrong have been because there was an issue bubbling underneath. How are you managing the risk that you don't have 23 votes because of this issue? This council has a proud tradition of taking the nuclear option. 2 council's projects that have already been scuppered due to unaddressed underlying issues. The original Silver Hill scheme and station approach." Councillor Lisa Griffiths, portfolio holder for health and wellbeing, responded, "All of the facilities are an expansion for the future. As we move forward, we trust you will see this is the right decision. All the data shows this is the right decision."
Demands for glass collection. A Winchester woman has launched a campaign to make the City Council carry out curbside bottle collections. Linda Murphy has already gained more than 500 signatures for a petition calling on Winchester City Council to bring in the new service. It comes amid government figures showing that Winchester City Council recycles less household waste than the average English authority. Ms. Murphy said, "I started this petition because I was fed up driving to the bottle bank with my bag of bottles, finding that there was no room to put any in, and then having to drive them back home again. Chatting about this problem with friends, I found I was not alone. To make matters worse, I then found out that many neighbouring boroughs, such as Eastleigh, have their glass collected at the curbside, and it seemed bizarre to me that we don't all have the same system. Latest figures show Winchester City Council recycled, reused or composted around a third, 34.6%, of household waste in the year to March 31st, 2016. South Oxfordshire, the top performing authority, recycles nearly double that amount, 67%. The average percentage for English councils is 43%. Ms Murphy added, there is no good reason for Winchester to be so far behind. Among the groups joining Ms Murphy in calling for curbside glass recycling is Littleton and Hairstock Women's Institute. Group President Grazina Holland said, there are few people in the WI who don't recycle, so this doorstep collection is completely to our advantage. A spokesman for Winchester City Council said, recycling rates in Winchester are some of the best in Hampshire, but the City Council recognises that other parts of the country are now doing better and that new efforts are needed.
And here we have libraries host Christmas charities. 10 Hampshire libraries have opened their doors to host charity Christmas card shops, helping to raise thousands of pounds. They're part of the national network of more than 300 temporary Christmas shops across the UK run by volunteers from Cards for Good Causes. The outlets can be found in the libraries in Alsford, Chandler's Ford, Eastleigh, Alton, Basingstoke, Fareham, Farnborough, Fleet, Tadley and Yateley. In Hampshire, there are 15 Cards for Good Causes shops, of which 10 are located in libraries. They stock a range of Christmas cards from 28 charities, including Alzheimer's Society, Cancer Research, Age UK, RNLI, Save the Children and Stroke Association. Working in partnership with Hampshire Libraries helps keep costs to a minimum, with 70p in every pound going back to the charity that made the card. In the past 10 years, charities have received more than £40 million from Cards for Good Causes. Judith O'Sullivan of Cards for Good Causes said, we're looking forward to welcoming shoppers to our pop-up shops across Hampshire this season. Buying Christmas cards through Cards for Good Causes is the best way to get access to the widest selection of Christmas cards available, and each card or product purchased makes a vital contribution to the charities that we partner. Also available in the shops and online is a fabulous range of festive gifts, decorations, wrappings and stocking fillers, from colourful tea towels and festive napkins to traditional advent calendars and candles. And this is accompanied by a photograph of a very small chap holding up, looking very happy, but holding up a charity Christmas cards poster. And I believe the Winchester charity Christmas card stall is in Winchester Guildhall.
Acclaimed writer in conversation. Home Start Winchester is to host another celebrity event in the city. Last year, John Miller was in conversation with Dame Judi Dench. This year, author Claire Tomalin will be in conversation with John Miller at the Guildhall on Saturday, January the 13th at 6 o'clock in the evening. Claire Tomalin has written 9 acclaimed biographies. Mary Wollstonecraft, Percy Bysshe Shelley, Catherine Mansfield, Nellie Ternan, Mrs. Jordan, Jane Austen, Samuel Pepys, Thomas Hardy and Charles Dickens. The last 3 of which she has previously discussed with John Miller in Winchester. Now she's written her memoir, A Life of My Own, and will talk about it to help raise funds for family support charity Home Start Winchester. For many years she resisted writing about herself. Literature has always been her life, and in addition to her books, she has also served as literary editor of The New Statesman and The Sunday Times. We are so excited to be hosting another celebrity event in Winchester, thanks to our good friend John Miller, and again backed by our generous sponsors, Dutton Gregory Solicitors, said Home Start Winchester chairman Liz Cooper. Claire Tomalin's previous visits to Winchester were all sellouts, so early booking is advisable for all those who wish to hear one of our great writers talking about her eventful life. That's January the 13th at 6 o'clock in the Guildhall.
Remember that time? Watching Winchester's Christmas lights being switched on showed the strange dichotomy of Winchester at its best and its worst. As big issue seller Kevin Colick switched the lights, Belgarum couldn't help but feel a pang of festive cheer. Even the children were well behaved. It's a shame the same couldn't be said for some of the parents. A mother proclaimed that she would swing for someone if she couldn't get any closer. She never did. Instead, she growled at anyone who got too close to her brood and complained about the audacity of those in front of her for getting there early and patiently waiting. Meanwhile, her partner, who was at least 6 foot tall, decided it was time to put little Tabitha on his shoulders, making sure nobody else could get a look in. But maybe this act of rude self-entitlement will be worth it, because in years to come they can turn to their now grown-up children and say, "Remember that time we saw the Christmas lights?" And Tabitha will look back and shrug, "Whatever."
I'm afraid that concludes the extracts for the week ending the 24th of November 2017. Thank you to our editors, Sheila Shepherd, Jane Thomas, Helen Ricketts and Jean Gardner. Thanks to our copying and dispatch and memory stick preparation teams. And, of course, thanks to our readers, Noel Thorpe Tracy.
Goodbye.
Heather Thorpe Tracy.
Goodbye.
Jane Hardy.
Goodbye.
And from me, Roy Faithful. Thank you for listening. Goodbye for now, and I hope you have an enjoyable week ahead. When you finish with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet. Please place the correct address label on the front of the wallet too, and return the wallet as soon as possible. Thank you, and goodbye again.